And welcome to another episode of Nights at the Roundtable. It's your boy, Man Weezy. To our right, I got my boy, Be Real.
Yeah.
Today, we don't have the queen because she's home sick with something of the flu, or I think it's, we're scared that it's COVID. We're getting tested today. It's been negative. She's already taken 2 tests, and it's been negative, so we're good. But that's where she's at. So me and B are holding it down for the last episode of this season, and we're excited about it. Right now, currently, it's early in the morning, so we are drinking normal stuff. I got my BCAAs from the gym.
I just got done drinking some coffee.
Nothing crazy at 8 a.m. But this is good, yo. We're jumping into it. B, go ahead. Oh, is this a What You Reading moment?
Yeah, this is a What You Reading.
What You Reading.
Hell,
let's go.
I picked up this book by Brian Zahn, who you guys have heard us. We've talked about him several times on the pod, but he has this book called When Everything's on Fire, and the subtitle is Faith Forged from the Ashes. And so his big whole thing is that, obviously, in this time that we're living in an age of secularism, skepticism, cynicism, our worldviews have been shaken. And in a lot of ways, a lot of people's theological houses, ideological houses are on fire. And he talks about, you know, how do we build a faith from this point? Which is awesome, because I feel like there's so many people who, in a sense, that fire could be like a deconstruction time for them. And they feel like everything's falling apart. And so he even talks about, like, even in this time of deconstruction, there are some things worth saving.
Right.
And because, again, at the end of the day, your faith, your theological house is something that's sacred. It's something that's important. And so one of the stories he opens up with is years ago, remember when Notre Dame was on fire world was like mourning it. And it was kind of an interesting thing, because I remember watching it on the news, and there's a lot of people who wouldn't consider themselves people of faith, but that beautiful sacred thing being on fire, it, like, the whole world is getting behind it. GoFundMe's, all these sorts of things. But a little known story is that, it was 20 minutes from completely collapsing, like 20 minutes away. And so what ended up happening was there were some firefighters who refused to go in because it was too dangerous. And some other firefighters stepped up to the plate, volunteered, and ended up saving. Wow. And so what Brian is arguing is that there are some things in your faith that are just worth saving, even if it feels dangerous. And so
that's
the opening
good.
Thing, but I love it. Highly recommend. Go get that book.
That's a conversation that I always have with Ange, because in this process of, you know, it's the word deconstruction is such a trigger word for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I never knew that, because I just thought, it's what you do all the time with every ideology in your life, meaning life teaches you lessons, or you're inviting information into your life and it causes you to deconstruct whatever ideology that you have in place on multiple fronts. So to me, it's just like, oh, this is just an accurate description of what is actually happening. But I think there's this fear from people that it means that you're just basically throwing everything out.
Yeah.
And I always challenge Ange, because I know in her process of it all, it's been dangerous. Like, not dangerous, it's just kind of throwing everything out. And everything is triggering. And I keep telling her, babe, go back to the basics, because the basics work for you. Like, there was a time in your life where you were praying, you were reading, and life was exploding. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And it was just, I think it was the purity of what you wanted to see in God, not necessarily everything that was around you that caused you to be turned off by this, the culture, you know? So don't throw out the basics. Like, the basics are good.
Agreed. You know, that's something that I've, even this last year, like, I feel like, you know, deconstruction for me started like 2015. So this is now, we're 7 years later almost. Mm-hmm. Last year felt like the first year in that phase for me where I wasn't tearing as much so down, that I was actually starting to build things up.
Yeah.
And that's also kind of like what we're talking about a little bit today, is this whole thought process of you live yourself into a new way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I was saying this is kind of piggybacking, if you've listened to a few episodes back, we were talking about a couple things. One, we were talking about going deep, that most people have structured their lives in a way that they remain shallow or on the edges. And then the other thing we were talking about was, my mind just went blank right there.
The God in disguise?
Yes. Life is. Yes. God okay. Yeah. So Richard Rohr quotes his friend Percy Darcy and says, God comes to you disguised as your life.
Right.
2021. again, there's a lot of people, even some people I've talked to recently. Obviously, we're in a new year here, but there's a lot of people who still feel, I'm still under the fog of 2020.
Mm.
I'm still under the fog of 2021. 2022 just feels like this is going to just be a repeat. Like we're going for the trifecta of just bad years. And it's interesting because this year too, on my social media page, I feel like the beginning of every single year, for as long as I've been on Instagram, I always see these posts of vision boards.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Dude, this is the first year where I didn't see one single vision board post on my social media.
Yeah. And to be honest, I haven't seen a lot of 2022 is going to be your year or it's going to be amazing. Or except for Goggins.
Yeah.
He's always like, stay hard. Let's go.
We're running 37 miles. Yeah. And so a lot of those things I feel like, again, are just kind of signs of the times. But for me, 2021 was a year where I've actually started to rebuild things in my life.
Yeah.
And it's felt so good. Like, and not to say like those other years of tearing things apart, it felt bad and good at the same time. It felt good. Obviously, I'm getting rid of things I don't need. Felt bad because I'm losing things that were super important to me at one point in time.
Yeah.
And so one of the questions that I was asking last year is like, I feel like when you're getting rid of things, you are usually getting rid of the things that are non-essential or not working.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get rid of the things that are in the center, the things that hold you. And that's like even to comment on what you were just saying earlier is like, there are some things that are worth saving.
Yeah.
There are some things that you just should not get rid of in your faith and in your worldview. And so one of the things for me was I felt like all these things that I could get rid of, I'm so in touch with what I would say are the edges of what I believe, the edges of what I feel, all these sorts of things. And so the question that I was really asking myself last year is, how do I get to the center?
Mm.
There's something
the center inside, of what you believe,
the center of what I believe, the center, the core of who I am. And again, it's like such a weird place to go because you're like, there's so much here, but how do I access this?
Mm.
Like, how do I get to the center? And I kept thinking, you know what? The things that I've known how to get to the center have always been, hey, take some more time to meditate. Take some more time to pray. Sit here in the silence and contemplate, you know, and really wrestle with these things. And that's something that I've done that has been effective to a point. But then I really realized something last year. Last year, as far as personal circumstances and life events in my life, was probably one of the toughest years that I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And by far, one of the most rewarding years that I've had.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the growth that other people would see, but I feel like the growth within myself. And I was having a conversation with a friend the other day, and he was like, man, to be honest, I would rather relive 2020 than 2021.
Wow.
And I was asking myself that question, and I was like, yo, 2020... again, in the midst of a world pandemic, and I've shared on here, was an amazing year for Maddie and I.
Yeah.
Dude, there was like, I mean, obviously every year you go through some sort of trying time, but there was hardly any trying times.
Yeah, no, it was good for us too.
And so I was thinking about that, and I was like, but when I think about how much growth I made last year, even though it was tough as hell for me, I would probably choose 2021 again.
Yeah.
Because I love like what it's made in me and where it's caused me to go and to find like that core, that center. And so I was writing in my brand new journal that I got this year.
Nice.
And I realized the way that you awaken the center in you, that core, yes, by prayer, meditation, silence, solitude, all those sorts of things, but it's mostly by living, living consciously. And living consciously oftentimes looks like really being present. Because what ends up happening is when you live on the edges and you suffer there on the edges and you're taking it all in on the edges, what always happens is it ends up pushing you to the center to find that. But it's like you have to live life and you have to suffer.
Yep.
And that's like not a popular thing. Like I remember hearing sermons all the time that Jesus says, hey, in order for you to enter the kingdom, it's going to come by suffering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're like, I don't want to hear that. But I think what he's saying is not necessarily just like you're going to be persecuted for your faith. That's sure part of it. But what he's saying is when you live life here consciously and you're experiencing all these things that are shaping you and molding you, what it's going to cause in you is to all of a sudden find the center, find that anchor point within you. And that's the place that you're going to live your life out of, because that's the place where true strength, true identity, true resilience, all those things come from. And so for me in 2021, that's what caused me all these things, right? It's the same way like a street person, right? Someone who's living on the street, they're cold and rejected. Where do they got to go to find warmth? They got to go deeper, right? You can't just stay on the outskirts if you're feeling cold and rejected. Like, it forces you to go to a deeper place. It's the same way, right? We're going to say there's a woman who's an alcoholic, and she has her drinking problem has been affecting her life for as long as she can remember. And then there comes this breaking point when she realizes, oh my God, my actions have now caused so much hurt and shame to my family. And all of a sudden she moves now to this point of compassion. Mm. And that's the thing. It's like there's something that is lived on the outside that forces you to go inside to the center.
Right.
And that was like for me. And I mean, obviously this whole last season I shared last year, just like grieving, and I had a really bad season of depression, and you know, I suffered a really bad injury, and that did a whole number on me. And there was a lot of things that didn't happen that I wanted to happen.
Yeah.
And it pushed me to the center, and it shaved off all the things that weren't necessarily me to help me rebuild from the place that I should have been rebuilding to start.
Yeah. I always understood in my life that, just looking back, like the only times I leveled up as far as understanding, knowledge, relationship with God was during the hard and bad time. I just don't remember a season of like coasting where I was really like getting better as a human being.
Yeah.
It just wasn't. And it reminds me of, I'm going through Matthew McConaughey's book right now. Have you read it?
No, I want to check it out on Audible.
Bro, so good. It is so good. And you have to do it the Audible way because his voice, and he acts out everything. He does all the accents. It's awesome. But I was, I'm at the part where he's talking about his first brush with Hollywood, right? How he got into it. Mm-hmm. And he was living on some director, producer's couch who casted him in Austin for Texas Chainsaw Massacre, right? He was leaving to L.A. and he found out that there was a audition in Austin for Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And he was going in for like a side character.
Yeah.
Right? And then ends up realizing, he's like, no, I want to be a main character. And so he just goes in, auditions, gets the part, ends up staying in Austin. Then the director, who's from L.A., he's like, yo, I'm going to L.A. Director lets him stay on his couch, whatever, blah, 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 blah. So he heads out there and he does that. And somewhere in between movies, he was like, man, I need a job. I need to get some kind of job. So he goes to the director, producer, and he's like, hey, man, do you know any PA jobs or any whatever like that I can get so that I can, you know, to my next role? And the guy goes, shut the fuck up, Matthew. He goes, you go out there and you do some living first. You go out there and travel. Do something. Don't just sit here and ask for it. Mm. Go out there and live some life. And then we'll see if you're going to get an agent or not. That's literally just screams at him. And Matt, like, he was like, I understood what he was saying. Mm. So he's like, me and three of the other dudes that he did the movie with.
Yeah.
Got on a plane, saved up some money, went to Europe, and literally rode motorcycles through Europe for a whole month.
Wow.
The story is crazy. They each have $400, gets there, finds this guy who does who rents motorcycles, and the guy was like, okay, it's going to be, you know, $12,000 for all three bikes because these are brand new bikes. And Matthew McConaughey and the boys are like, we have $1,200. And the guy literally was like, you know, when I was your age, I rode through Europe on a bike with all of my friends. He was like, give me the $1,200, take the bikes. And they were like, are you serious? He's like, yeah. Gosh. So they ended up having the bikes and they started riding through Europe.
Man.
Like this crazy, crazy experience. And then one of them crashes the brand new Ducati. Hmm. They call up the guy, the owner. At this point, they're like, oh, this is... Because the owner's wife was like, don't do it. They're going to...
Yeah.
Just don't do it. So they call him up and they're like, we're so sorry, we crashed the bike. And he goes, oh my God, are you okay? They're like, yeah, but the bra-. He's like, no, I don't care about the bike. Are you okay? Yeah, okay. I'm going to have a driver out there tomorrow. Meet me there. It's going to take him about 8 hours to get there. Meet me where the bike's at. Mm-hmm. So they do that. And the driver pulls up. And the driver is him, the guy who owns the bike shop, right? So he goes, man, it's good to know you're okay. So he goes to the back to open the gate. And they push up the bike. And this guy's already pulling out another new Ducati.
No.
Gives him the new Ducati and goes, go live life. Have an adventure. Takes the old one. Doesn't charge him. Doesn't anything.
Oh, my gosh.
They end up going the whole month. He's like, we drank from the streams in Austria. We ate here. We did all these things and came back. And all the guy wanted was the lived experience. He's like, yeah. I just want you to tell me the story.
Yeah.
And when they got back, they told him all the stories. And then he gets back to LA and the guy's like, now you deserve an agent. And he was like, I didn't do anything more on acting. I just went and I lived life and let life teach me some stuff.
Yeah.
And I think the important message was you can't draw from something that you haven't experienced.
Yeah.
And if you're out there hypothesizing or theorizing like ideas, theologies, ideologies, life will teach you what you really believe. And like Jordan Peterson says that. He's like, yeah. Don't listen to what people, don't go or believe what anybody believes based on what they say. That's why I think it's so ironic, all this like, you know, keyboard warriors on yeah. Facebook and whatever. It's like what you say will never determine what you believe. Yeah. How you act will determine what you really, really believe.
Yeah.
And those actions will be based on what life teaches you. And for sure, I've only learned and progressed during hard times. Now, I don't know if that's saying that I want more hard times, but I guess as someone who wants to become a better human and a person, I think I welcome difficult problems because it forces me to find great solutions for those problems.
Yeah.
And I think that's what real estate does for me like all the time. Mm. Like I'm forced into very scary situations because it's so much money that I'm dealing with. And on the other side of that, there's like this possibility of failure. And it's so scary. But I was watching Will Smith's show a couple of days ago and he goes, on the other side of the darkest places is light, inevitably. Mm-hmm. On the other side of fear, something that his grandma always told him, on the other side of fear, you'll find joy. Like whenever you get through that worst fear, you're gonna find joy because if you survive it, it's no longer gonna have that thing on you.
Yeah.
The way I'm playing with real estate right now, like, and it's not even being braggadocious. It's more so like I am proud of myself that I am able to put this much money into a very, like I'm believing in myself.
Yeah.
Whereas 5-10 years ago, I would be curled up in a ball, fooled with fear, just like I'm going to fail. I'm going to fail. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
But after I got through my first one where I didn't make any money, and I was like, but I figured it out and I got all my money back. Okay, let's go. And it made me even more excited. Now I'm putting up more money. Now I'm diversifying. Now yeah. I got, you know, bands over here. And I'm just going all in. And I'm like, no, on the other side of fear, on the other side of this lived experience that we're having is a better lesson. It's a better faith.
Yeah.
Because then you stop being scared of stuff.
Yeah.
Even though I'm still, you know,
yeah,
crawling.
That's the thing about those kind of times is that you never fully want it. But I feel like now I'm at a place where I don't fight it as much.
Correct. It's like, so, bring it.
Yeah. It's like, okay, this is going to be painful. I understand that. But I understand what's on the other side of that. Mm-hmm. So now it's not necessarily like I'm like, bring it on. But I just don't despise it anymore.
Yeah.
Right. It's like change. Like, change is inevitable. Like, it's the only thing that is guaranteed to happen. And most of us see this as a burden.
Right.
And I think when you get a little bit like further down the road, it's no longer a burden and it's no longer a pleasure, right? No one pleasures in like, I love change. Like, that just, you know, but instead of seeing it as a burden, I now see it as an opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's like the mind shift for me. And that mind shift only happens on the other side of lived experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so even what you were saying earlier of just talking about on the other side of, I think you said darkness is light, and on the other side of fear is something that can bring joy.
Yeah.
Is we, man, it was a couple episodes ago, but that's the problem that I have with cynicism, right? Cynicism to me is lazy. It's lazy because what someone is doing is saying, I have a problem with that. I don't like that. And what ends up happening is they just remain on the edges.
Yes.
And that's the problem, because it's like all of life is trying to push you off the edges into the thing that matters, into the thing that holds this whole world together, into the thing that holds your faith together. And that's where joy is.
Yeah,
like,
man.
Joy is like, hey, I understand what's on the edges and I feel it and I embrace it and it's painful and it sucks, but joy is big enough to embrace all of that and still put you there at the center.
Yeah.
And so like for me, it's like, I thought I knew everything when I was in my early 20s. Like, yeah. I was like, oh, bro.
God, I hate 20s me.
Oh, man.
I hate 20s me, man.
And it's so funny because now, like, I'll talk to, I call them kids now, even though I'm not that further along. But I'll talk to them, these kids, early 20s. They got all these ideas. They got all these ideas about what I said, about my ideas. And I laugh. And with, like, the most love and graciousness in my heart, I just am like, buddy, you got to live some life.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, what do you know until it actually is lived, right? Mm-hmm. Even in, I pulled out an old Bible. I just started reading beginning of this year. Like, you know, for me recently, I've been reading a lot of books and stuff, and I'll read my Bible, like, not every day, but, mm-hmm. you know, pretty somewhat regularly. But I've gotten now back into the habit of actually reading my Bible regularly.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, I was reading John 1 the other day, and one of my favorite passages in ever, you know, and I love the way that the Message puts it, is that he says that the Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood.
Mm.
And this is kind of the reference, is obviously in the beginning was the Word was God, the Word was with God, and, you know, and essentially the Word became flesh and it dwelt among us. And I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about so many people's faith is just these ethereal ideas.
Right.
Like, it's all these things. And you said something a while back, and you were talking about how if it's just a good idea, someone can argue with you and change your viewpoint of that idea.
Mm-hmm.
That's like obviously set in a different way. But I just thought about that, and no one can argue with my lived experience.
Correct. Yep.
My ideas that I come up with, my hypotheses, all these sorts of things, someone could debate me out of that and totally change my mind in one day. But my lived experience and the conclusions that I arrive after those lived experiences are now solidified, because this is the reality that has happened to me. And that is when that thing actually becomes, that's when these words actually become flesh and blood, and it's actually lived out in your neighborhood. Like, yeah. That's the whole goal of all this thing.
Yeah.
And so I wrote down something else, is that every time that the edges cause you to suffer, they inform you. So what they do is they partially self-destruct you, and you find out all these things that were part of the problem. And so then at this point, is the place on the edges that fuels the pain. It also allows you to now let it go. And then the center now stands revealed and sufficient. Like, it's like you have to make mistakes and you have to learn and you have to fail and you have to be humbled, because all these things are going to self-destruct you, but it's going to inform you about what's actually real.
Yeah. It's funny, because what you're talking about, I had a conversation with Ann yesterday. Was it last night or two nights ago? I wish she was here, because, we are, for those of you who don't know, we moved, which we talked about before. So we were in the hills, big house, we loved it. And then we ended up being vagabonds for the last year, living out of suitcase, living at B's house. And now we're finally moved into our remodeled house, which previously was going to be a 4,000 square foot house and now is still a 2,000 square foot house. So we're in the unpacking process, right? And we're like realizing we have way too much crap. Like, I have so much stuff that I'm trying to sell and get rid of. And we're like trying to find where do we put our clothes? I got duffel bags of clothes that I have to give away, try to sell. Like, it's insane, because there is no more room. So midway through, Andrew's just like kind of frustrated, because he's like, I don't have nowhere to put my shoes. I don't have nowhere to put my clothes, right? And as we're doing it, you know, my other lived wife, that's a Penelope, because they're both like twins, both twins. So they're both on the same energy. Both of them are like finding what's wrong. And I know they're not doing it out of like malicious thing, but they're just letting me know what we don't have and what's wrong. Pen's trying to figure out where to put her makeup and just trying to figure out where to put her shoes. And there's like a frustration. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, look at this. It's going to be nice. Oh, I can get this. You know, we can do this. You know, try to make everybody stay on a positive energy. So Anne says something that kind of got us into this really long conversation, because she was like, this isn't what I signed up for. And I was like, well, what did you sign up for? She's like, well, we had these plans. The house was supposed to be this. We were supposed to have a big old closet, a big old master bedroom. It was just supposed to be different. And this isn't what I signed up for when we moved out of Castlewoods. And I was like, babe, what did we sign up for? Because why did we move? And she's like, well, we moved, you know, because, you know, we wanted to not pay that much for a house. And I was like, no, why did we move? Like, what's the reason? Like, what was the core reason of why we moved? It had nothing to do with the affordability, because we could afford to stay there and we can afford whatever.
Yeah.
But what was the main reason? And she's like, what? And I was like, the main reason was you didn't want to have to work as hard as you did before. You wanted a little bit of a breath. Mm-hmm. That's what you told me that you wanted, right? And prior, you would always make fun of me because I was always the one that, you know, when I want to celebrate, I want a new watch, I want a new car. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I just want to celebrate with my family. The most important to me is family and being able to take them on vacations. And that's how she's going to spend her fun money. And I spend it on cars and watches, you know? So she would always make fun of me. She's like, you're just, you know, I don't get it. You just like cars and watches. And I'm like, so either the girl back then didn't know what she really, really at a core. It was nice to say ethereally,
yeah,
I just want to spend it on my family and I just want to be in a situation where I can take my family and if that girl was being honest with herself and me, then you're in the best position ever. Because not only do we have more liquid money, but our bills are cut in half. Mm-hmm. So you should be at your happiest. Unless you were being dishonest with yourself.
Yeah.
And life just caught up to you and basically smacked you in the face and said, now it's time to level up. Because according to the old you, the most important thing was not a house. Mm. It was being able to take care of your family and experience life. So I was like, which one is it?
Yeah.
And that kind of like deaded the conversation because she couldn't really... She's like, can I have both? You can have both, but that requires us to work a lot harder.
Yeah.
Because now we're back in the hills in a $3 million house with a $15,000 mortgage.
Yeah.
That doesn't come without working harder. We're not trust fund babies. We don't have, you know, money just coming out of nowhere. I'm building towards that.
Yeah.
But it forced her, and this is what she's dealing with now. She's having to work through that process, and I'm holding her to that flame, like part of life saying, hey, our life situation brought us here. But technically speaking, we're not only are we more liquid, not only do we have more money, not only are we on the better position for me to get you to where you really want to be. Cause I'm like, 3 or 4 flips in the next 3 years to 4 years, I can hit my goal of total capital. Mm-hmm. Right now we're halfway there. Mm-hmm. I can hit my goal of total capital that I want to put into a 10, 12% interest investment and be cash flowing $50,000, $60,000 a month.
Wow.
I'm like three, maybe four flips away from that. As well as income, that if we can just keep doing pretty well for the next 3 or 4 years, we could be there.
Wow.
So I'm like, if you were able to allow life to show you something and not get stuck, like what you were talking about earlier, we get stuck in our ideologies or our theologies and we hold them tight. When I'm like, I don't know why you would ever want to hold on to anything tight. If you allow God and life to teach you, the process is going to make you into a better person. Your ideologies will get better. Your theology will get better. How you how you think and experience and process will only get better if you hold on like loose, like yeah. be like water and just like flow, because other than that, you're gonna end up in a situation where you're gonna want life to bend to what you think should be.
Yeah.
And life just don't play by your rules. It just won't. Mm-mm. So I'm telling her, I'm like, baby, you just really gotta think, which person are you? Was that little girl back then being honest with herself and me? Or was that little girl back then just saying something because it sounded good?
Yeah.
It's kind of like what I always say when I see basketball players or rappers or whatever, and they're like, man, I just want to make it so I can take my mom out the hood. And then the first thing they buy is like $100,000 chain when they make it. You know, I'm like, you just want to get rich, bro. Just say it.
Yeah.
Where that's what happened to me. I'm like, oh, I just want to make it so I can take my mom out the place she's at, get her a house, you know, get my dad a nice car, blah, 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 blah. And then the first time Ange came to me and said, hey, I want to remodel my mom's bathroom. It's going to cost us 10 grand. And my butt clenched. I was like, what?
Whoops.
Like, what are we going to do? And I literally had some kind of like disagreement. And it showed something in me. And I had to call myself out. I was like, for a good day or two, it bothered me. And I was like, what is this? Because doing something for her mom is amazing.
Yeah.
Why am I feeling this like, no? And I was like, oh, because I was full of shit. I said, oh, when we make it, we're going to do this. But not really.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make it and have more money.
Yeah.
So I called myself out and I was like, yes, babe, let's go. And while you're at it, you know, we ended up getting her a car too. Like,
yeah,
let's go. And anytime she would ask me to do something for her family, I heard or felt that little come up.
Yeah.
And then I would be like, no, do it, babe. Do it, do it, do it, do it, do it. Because I definitely, life is showing me that if I left up to my own ideologies and my own way of thinking, it's a selfish way of self-preservation.
Yeah.
That's what it is. I just want to protect myself from being hurt, from being poor, from being wrong.
Yeah.
All these things.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think what you said is so, so vital, so crucial, is it's the self-preservation, and it's a false self-preservation, right? Like, I forgot, man, who I was hearing talk about this, but they're talking about the shadow self, and they were saying that the shadow self is the only part of you that could get embarrassed, humiliated, angered, or like, you know, shook.
Right.
Because our true selves, which I would argue is found in the center, is rooted in love. It's secured in love. Like, it's not in need. It's not in wanting. It's just, it's secure.
Yeah.
And so life comes to you. It reveals false self. False self's time is done. This is what you were really about. Like, I remember there was, used to be this water slide at Waterworld. So where I grew up in the East Bay area, there's this kind of somewhat big town called Concord. It's the city that I actually went to high school in. But anyways, Waterworld was like low-key one of my favorite water parks to go to. And the thing was, I could only do the big water slides that had the open top because I get claustrophobic. So some of those like tunnels that you're just going hella fast and you're just in darkness for like what feels like hours.
Yeah.
Scares the hell out of me. So I couldn't do that. But they had this one that was like this giant funnel. And so there was like this huge circle, and obviously it would funnel down to the bottom and then would push you out into this like lazy river type situation. And I remember when we were kids, we just thought it was the coolest thing that as soon as you hop in, you try and hang on. Like, you try and like fight what the funnel is actually trying to get you to, which is to this part to go down into the lazy river. So we'd be hanging on the edges and we'd be like, eventually the water slide was far too powerful and it would push us into the center. But I think so many people hang on so hard to the edges of life because that's where they can hide behind their excuses. Because excuses are only valid when there's still not necessarily clarity. It's only on the edges, because once you get to that middle, then you know like what truth is, what's real, because all is revealed. And so even what you're saying, a couple of situations, like I was thinking like low key my life, man, there's been so many times, especially this last decade, so many things that I thought, oh, once I get this, yeah, I'll be able to do this. Or yeah, I want to be here because I want to be able to And most of those are lies.
Yeah.
Because then life is a great teacher and revealer, I'd argue, right? Because like God comes to us disguised as our life. And so all of a sudden, all these things get revealed. You weren't really about it.
That, yo, if you don't, I tell people all the time, if you don't do it with what you got, you're not going to do it with what you get. It's just not going to happen. And that's anything and everything. That's generosity. That's, you know, like my nephew, I want to be a rapper. And I was like, cool. I sent him the most basic mic, my old Mac, and just a basic setup. Mm-hmm. Probably like 3 months in, he's like, hey, uncle, I want to get a better mic, a better this and better that. I was like, how many songs you put out with the mic that you already have? He's like, two. I was like, two in 3 months. Bruh, you think a better mic is going to make you do it more? Mm-hmm. You have before it was, oh, I don't have a setup. I got to go to studio. I got to pay for it.
Yeah.
Now you got a setup and you only put out two songs in 3 months.
Yeah.
You don't want it.
Yeah.
You have to earn that microphone. Show me. Yeah. Put out 10 songs in 3 months. Show me that you're actually going to do it. Because if not, a more expensive mic, just it's not going to make you, you know, your life, what you do, your actions, like we said before, is going to show you, you know, what you believe. Earlier, you were talking about staying on the outskirts forms like a more critical way of thinking or in criticizing, like really is what it is.
Right.
I was listening to Jordan Peterson, and this is something that really, really rocked me. He said, most people who are critical or who criticize a lot of things are people who are disconnected from gratitude. Mm. They're no longer, they just don't live in gratitude. They're not grateful.
Yeah.
They can only see what's wrong and what could be better as opposed to how far have you come?
Yeah.
Look how better you have become or how better life has become. So, like Ann said a statement in our conversation where she's like, you know, this is not home to me. And I was like, think about what you just said. Because there's other people that can say, this is not home to me. Why can they say that? Because it's a true statement, because they can't afford a house. Mm-hmm. So they'll be renting somebody's house or renting an apartment and they'll be like, this isn't like home, but it's my home for right now. You know, it's not my home. It's just the home that I'm in.
Yeah.
Well, why are you not in a home? Because I can't afford a home right now. So whatever. So I was like, imagine you in that situation. Imagine you in the same house saying what you just said, but this isn't our house. We're renting it because we can't afford to buy it. Mm. Those words you just said will actually ring way more true. And I guarantee you, you'd be begging to own this house.
Yeah.
Because that meant you can actually afford to. That meant your life was doing something well that you can actually afford to buy this house. Think about what it is that you were saying, you know, because I think there's this, I do this other podcast that we had this guy on and he was schooling me on thought content, the difference between thought content and thought process. And I was like, ooh, that sounds so juicy. And he's like, there's a massive difference between the things that we think and how we think. Mm. So thoughts get in our minds all the time. Your mind is fluttered with things. It's just so many things.
Yeah.
You think about those things at a rapid amount of a pace and they stay in your mind and you start thinking, oh, this is what I think. Mm. As opposed to thinking about things and saying, why am I thinking this way?
Yeah.
So I'm stressed. I got bills. I'm thinking about my bills. I'm thinking about, you know, my injury. I'm thinking about this person that cheated on me. I'm thinking about these things. And then you keep thinking about them. And then you start thinking, oh, there's something wrong with me. He cheated on me. Oh, my life sucks. I can't afford this. Oh, da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Because these are all your thought content. So they become now the way or who you are. And then you start operating and making decisions based on the thoughts that you think.
Yeah.
Different approach would be, oh man, that person cheated on me. Okay. Why am I feeling less valued because he cheated on me or she cheated on me? Mm-hmm. Why do I feel less valued? Why do I feel like there's something wrong with me? Then you have to go behind. Hmm. Then you have to go to the center. Why do I think that?
Yeah.
Do I not value myself? Do I really think that there's something wrong with me that caused him to go do that? Or can I look at this person objectively and say, oh man, he's probably just hurt.
Yeah.
He's probably just like thinking that he can live this way forever. And at the end of the day, he's going to hurt himself way more than me. Like what he did to me wasn't personal.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing this to himself.
Mm.
I'm just taking it because I need something to blame, because it's not enough for me to just say, oh, let me just show grace to this person because they're just hurting more than I am. For them to try to hurt me like that when I didn't do anything, they're probably hurting more than I am. That's a much more complex thing to have to go through, because yeah. not only do you have to work through your anger to offer grace to the person that hurt you, but then you got to offer forgiveness.
Yeah.
And then if you can't do that, then you got to ask yourself, why can I do that?
Mm.
Do I somehow feel morally higher than this person? That's just one of your thoughts.
Yeah.
But it forces you to go down this road with life as it's teaching you, mm-hmm. and you're forced to now figure out, why do I feel this way? Why yeah. do I think this way? And then it changes everything.
Yeah.
Your whole like way of, so now that's thought process, not thought content. Most people get stuck on thought content. That's where theology and ideologies are born, right? Mm-hmm. You read something, you listen to the pastor, you whatever, and enough people think about it and you're like, this is what I believe.
Yeah.
Then life happens to you and you're forced to rethink. Like the first time I did a podcast with Jonathan Tulin, mm-hmm. or Andreas Moss now. And he, you know, it was like, I'm gay. I was married to a woman the whole time. Me and him did tours together in the Christian yeah. industry, you know, blah, 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 blah. After that podcast, I had a mom email me who was a staunch believer. And she was like, hey, I'm so glad you did this podcast. You know, nobody knows I'm emailing you. I can't really go to my church for this. And she's just like, my son came out and told me that he was gay. And now I don't know what to do. I don't know where I can take him.
Yeah.
I don't feel safe saying, bringing this, how I feel, to my church. I know what they're going to say. So I'm messaging you. And I was like, man, I didn't even think people like this existed. Like, I didn't even think this was a demographic.
Yeah.
But before that, she would have been like, gays are going to hell. This is yeah. this is what the Bible says. Then all of a sudden, my son's gay. How do you interpret these scriptures?
Yeah.
Now she's asking me questions. How is there? She's basically asking me, like, she's basically saying life has just taught her the craziest lesson and she needs a way out.
Yeah.
She needs some kind of hope or a way through the darkness, because now she knows, oh my God, the way I've been thinking, feeling, I can't project that onto my son.
Mm.
And I think that day she really found out what the God in her really wanted her to be like.
Yeah.
Because now all of a sudden there's mercy and grace to go around.
Yeah.
Now it's like, find me a way for my son to not end up in hell. A month ago, I would have been like, sorry, all gay people going to hell.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, this is bonkers, which is why I always say I will never hold on to being right, not anymore, because life has just taught me too many times how not equipped I am to be an expert at anything. I'm just a freaking finite human being throwing out hypotheses that sometimes are right in certain seasons, but then in other seasons they're not right anymore.
Yeah.
Sometimes it works here in the now, and then 10 years later your life is different and there's different variables, and that same answer won't work.
Yeah.
A year from now, 2 years from now, it just won't, because you and life have this beautiful dance that you're doing that God is the music to, and you're realizing, man, the beat changes, the BPM doesn't stay the same, and we all got to be like fluid. We're going to go from a foxtrot to a freaking salsa to a freaking, you know,
yeah.
and all of it is beautiful if you can flow with it.
Yeah.
If not, there is going to be a constant deconstruction, like yeah. a constant tear down of walls. But how about you don't build any walls? How about you just run in a field that has no walls and let God be the wind, and he just kind of like ushers you, like you're just yeah. following this beautiful thing. Like that seems so much better than me, like to me, than what I was doing, building houses that I have to tear down a year later.
Yeah.
Cause I realized, oh, I wasn't right. I wasn't right on any of these walls or foundation. It was all trash. Now I got to rebuild another one, you know?
Yeah. It was kind of reminding me of the story of what you were saying, is that, again, when you think of edges versus center, right? That's kind of the big kind of hinge point of this conversation. Years ago, I remember experiencing my first tornado. Where was I at? I want to say I was in Oklahoma somewhere on a ministry trip. And I remember we were in the hotel, and this was like my first time I ever experienced a tornado, and it was so scary because us Californians, I'm like, earthquake, shoot, I'll sleep through that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, easy. I think even Ange has a whole bit like this now in her new hour. And so I remember thinking, wow, this is really scary. Like, hopefully I could stay alive, you know. But I remember waking up the next morning after an eventful night of sleep. And I remember this one tree that I had noticed the day before, and it had some like nice little nests in it and stuff in its branches. Ends up getting like ripped up. Now, the only thing that really stood was it had a huge like base or foundation of it. And so the roots stayed strong throughout the storm, but a lot of the things that were on the branches just got ripped up. And I feel like so many times when you don't have that lived experience yet, and you just got all this head knowledge and you got these good sounding ideas, like, the storms of life are going to come and they are going to get you. And if you have put everything on those branches, you are going to get destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that's going to be standing is the thing that's strong enough to stand. And again, so I realized that this last year in rebuilding so many of these things that I'm now adding to my house, right? Because I think visually, I still like the framework of having a house. And I think this house is huge. I just think that there's a lot of rooms that are unused or rooms that need to be completely gutted to create more open space within the theological house that I'm building or whatever. And so I realize, oh my gosh, these are the things that have still been remaining after these last 6 years of my life. Mm. Oh, this is what I need to continue to build out from. And right. This is the place that I need to live from. And again, obviously, I think I've made, especially this last year, I made some dumb mistakes, you know, some mistakes that I could carry with me. But reminded me of this quote I was reading the other day of Julian of Norwich. And it says this, commonly, first we fall and later we see it. And both are the mercy of God. Mm. I love that. First we fall and then we see. And both are the mercy. Like so many of us, we think of like the mercy and the kindness of God only comes after we've repented. But like when you think of that, like falling, failing, living life knocking you down on your ass is like it's part of the grace of God. Like the fall in the garden, immediately after the fall, God, he covers them. Right? It's all part of it. It's like you can't really fall into the meat of this life unless you're constantly going through the cycle of like failing and falling and stumbling, and then you get up and you run and you jump, you fall, you get hit. Like this is all part of the circle of life that's all baked into the system.
Mm-hmm.
And all of it, it's the mercy of God.
Yeah. It's funny because sometimes we'll think the mercy of God, I used to think
the
mercy of God was when I wasn't going through stuff.
Yeah.
But the mercy of God is not going to be like displayed that way. Like it's not one of those things where, could you say that? Yes. I'm just not experiencing it the way I do when life does try to take me out and it can't. Mm. Like I feel mercy and grace a whole different way than just someone who's like, nothing's happened to me. Awesome. You know, like God's mercy is with me. Like, oh, thank you, Jesus. When it's like, no, the whole world came at me. I'm still here.
Mm.
That hits different.
Yeah.
That hits way different, man. And again, Jesus, I'm not saying to bring me through shit, but I am saying that I do welcome the necessary moments in life that teach me lessons that humble me to the point where I know that I still need a savior. I still need help. I still need advice. I made a decision yesterday. I signed this contract to jump into this commercial real estate deal, and everything goes right now. Real estate is like my best teacher. It's like it's so funny. God just does everything through real estate right now. And I was so nervous and so afraid of signing this thing. And it's an amount that's a lot, but it's an amount to which I'm like, okay, I can gamble. And I'm not really gambling with it. It's just that when you hand over money to someone else, it's this real estate venture where, you know, you get a bunch of investors together and we all go in on a certain amount for a preferred return.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fear because you're handing money over to somebody that I know them, but, you know, once you hand somebody a bunch of money and say, hey, make me money with this, you start really questioning your relationship with that person because you're like, do I know Like, do I? And I remember I was driving through Malibu yesterday, and I was like, I pulled over and I started asking him a bunch of questions, like just grilling the dude. And I was just like, you know what? At some point, like in this point of my life, I just have to jump in and not let fear take me out. Or if it does take me out, if this deal does go sour, I'm going to learn something. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to learn something amazing. And I guess that's what we're really saying. Like, yeah. You have to remove yourself from the edges, get yourself away from the outside of your life where maybe you're a little too critical about everything. I'm coaching somebody right now and I love her because she's going to hear this, but I'm never going to say who it is. And we die laughing because she's doing the dating apps and stuff. And the freaking cornballs that come at her. Like, I'm like, I didn't think people like this existed, but just straight cornball, cheesy people.
Dude.
Like, first message, what's up, my queen? No, she, what was one of them? She was like, hey, how you doing? Nice to meet you. How you doing today? And the dude goes, better now than my queen messaged me. I was like, we were both like, what? immediate, like, we X'd them out. But I think about, I feel like at the same time that I'm laughing and telling her to X them out, I'm like, you know what though? Maybe like you should at least give him one more chance to message back, because when you shut things down prematurely or when you're too critical of a certain situation, you do end up finding yourself in a circle that you can't get out of.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing that, like, we stay critical, and she noticed it. We even noticed it when we did it with Bobies in mm-hmm. the first season, where yeah. it was like, oh, it's way too easy to swipe
yeah.
and judge someone so easily.
Dude, that's my sister.
She doesn't even take two seconds.
No.
She is so fast.
She just swipe. And we're like, all like, dude, just slow down. See what they're about. And
it's creating something in her life. And I think that happens to us too. Like, when we look at situations that we're most critical of, situations that could be greatness on the other side of it.
Yeah.
If we swipe too quickly, man, you may miss out on becoming the better person that you would like to be, or finding your center, moving from the outside of your life where it is easier to just be afraid or be critical mm-hmm. and not move in. I think that should be like our word for the year.
Yeah.
Like get to the center.
Yeah. Get to that place that is real within you. And that's like, I realize I'm wired this way and not everyone's wired this way, not to like pat myself on my own back or toot my horn, but it's just how I view all the things in my life that come at me. It's like, how do I move forward through this? Mm-hmm. You know? So I think for people coming out of a rough 2 years and a start of a year that feels eerily similar to last year,
mm-hmm.
that is like, life happened to you in a way to move you forward. Like, that is the flow of the universe. Like, the universe wants you to win.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't actually believe that. Like, they actually don't believe that there is some benevolent God who actually wants you to progress and move forward into being a more whole person.
Yeah.
So all these things in life are coming to you as an invitation or an opportunity to move forward. And the holdback is just ourselves. Mm-hmm. Like, we get stuck on what's happening and not, why is this happening and what is it trying to show me? Mm-hmm. So, like, I think moving into this new year, it's like, if you haven't learned or you haven't grasped what these last 2 years of this last year was trying to get and, like, make within you, then you really need to answer that question before all these other peripheral things.
Yeah.
And for those of you like who are learning the lessons and stuff like that, let's use that in 2022 and yeah. let's build from there. Like, yeah. let's see what we can build and what we can dream and we can do from that place.
Yeah. I did a video for the Patreon members. And if you're not a Patreon member, consider it. It'd be great to have you. Patreon.com/NATRT. There's a link in the description. And I asked them, this January, I was starting off with 10 manifestations, 10 things that I'm going to speak into existence that I'm going to go after. And I've done this before I just never kept with it because not meaning speaking the manifestations. I always act like I'm going towards these things, but I think there's something. And when I, the reason I say I think, because it's, you know, manifesting comes from an actual speaking it into existence. You know, like you're just speaking it over yourself. There's power in your words. So I always stop saying things and I just work towards them, right? But this year, what I'm going to try to do is continually say the thing. So I listed 10 and I invited you Patreon members. Well, now I'm inviting everybody who hears this to list out 10 things that you're going to try to accomplish this year. Write them down and have somebody that you can stay accountable with. And it's not, I can't stand New Year's resolutions. It's not, if you're a person that does that, you know, and you never come through, like maybe this is not what, you know, this sounds like another one of those. This is for me genuinely, or anybody who is beyond tired of the status quo or the same old, and they do want to find the center of who they are. I've listed out 10 things. I already knocked off one of the things with this new house that I bought. And so I'm going hard this year and I'm manifesting these 10 things. And I know that all these 10 things on the other side of them, the difficulties are all, they're all difficult. But on this other side of it, I know I'm slowly but consistently walking myself to the center of who I am. Like I feel it. I'm like, yes, these things will happen. I will accomplish them for the sole purpose of finding more of me in all of this, you know?
Yeah.
So we just want to encourage you guys. Check us out there. If you're listening, subscribe in all the places. If you're watching on YouTube, if you don't know we have a YouTube, there's a link in the description. Come check us out on YouTube so you can see our faces. Usually, you know, usually we looking good. So I'm just saying, like, if you want better things to look at in your life, I'm just kidding. We love you guys. And like we like to say, we pray you find a seat at the table. But if you don't, you're always welcome at ours.
Cheers.
Cheers.